City. It is a big one for us. Rob Ross, John Grayson, and we have our anniversary edition. Rob, we've been doing this for how many years now?
5 years. But the most important question I can ask you right now is, what'd you get me?
Yeah, right. I got you this giant smile I'm wearing right now. I hope you enjoy it.
You son of a bitch. I give you diamonds, you give me disease.
Yes, well, what a week, man. What a week I'm having. What a week I'm having. And it's not looking like it's going to get any better. And it's only Monday, so, it's looking like it's going to be a particularly nasty one. But let's start out in New York, man. What's happening around the block from you?
Well, right now it's, well, first of all, it's so unbearably hot, I can't even tell you. It's like 500 degrees easy.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm a chicken right now. I'm roasted all the way through. It's just, it's horrific. And you know what it was? It reminded me of when I was in Austin. It was that kind of heat.
Uh-huh.
You know, that you go out for 5 minutes and you just want to run right back inside, but you can't run because it's just too damn hot.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to do that. And that's where everybody goes back to that line from Biloxi Blues. This is like Africa hot. Tarzan couldn't take this kind of hot.
Now, the thing is, I can't run also because, ta-da, I'm now on the disabled list because I sprained my ankle last Wednesday.
What did you do?
God's honest truth, we were walking to the ferry, my wife and I. We were talking about how there are broken paving stones on the steps that lead down through Borough Hall, which is the way you would walk down to the ferry terminal from our apartment. And I said to her, elderly people and children could easily fall on this and get hurt.
You should have known better.
It was raining a little bit, just light rain. And as I came off the very last step, which is a low step, I didn't see that there was water there. And I was rocking my PF Flyers.
Uh-huh.
And my right leg just went out from under me, and I came down in an awkward manner and just rolled that ankle. When I tell you, it's not even 6 inches off the ground, but it's the way I fell.
Oh, yeah.
And like an idiot, I hobbled my way down to the ferry after I caught my breath and tried to regroup myself. And let me just tell you, you know, on Thursday, my foot turned a very interesting shade of deep purple.
And you know, Sweet Lucy was a dancer.
Hush. And I have been hobbling around. I will say this much. It has remarkably improved in that short amount of time.
Excellent.
Going down steps is what's difficult. Going up, no problem. I have something of a limp, or as I like to call it, my pimp stride. So, you know, if you see me, a.k.a. King Biscuit, you know I'm a-coming for my money.
Yeah.
Better have my money. Now, what's going on in the neighborhood, because we're definitely going to be talking about our neighborhoods, there was a report that between the mayor's office and the MTA, they're looking very seriously into a rapid transit bus lane along the north shore of Staten Island to improve conditions. How many times do we have to explain over and over and over again a bus line or an area dedicated to buses only is not the answer? We don't need any more traffic. What we need is the long, I hate to say it, the long dead but still there North Shore train line to be rebuilt, resurrected, and then triangulated with what's currently a not very often used railroad spur that could connect the North Shore with the West Shore. You turn it into a light rail, and that would connect very easily with the one train line that we currently have. It would be greener. It would be faster. And yet somehow someone is missing the point. Oh, wait. De Blasio is the mayor. He's retarded.
That's the point. Yeah, right.
This is the guy who wants to build trolley cars that go from Brooklyn to Queens. Hey, moron. Traffic in Brooklyn and Queens is bad enough. Where do you think you're going to get the room in the streets to build a trolley line? Trolleys were removed, oh, I don't know, 75 years ago?
Yeah.
50 years ago, whatever it was. No, I'm 50. I'm over 50, so no. It was well before that. So it had to be 60, 70 years ago that they removed them. It is so puzzling to me that this asshole is not only the mayor, but he's allowed to make these pronouncements, and agencies of criminality like the MTA are allowed to go along with it. But then again, the MTA is going to raise our fare in 2019 and 2020, and we already know that. So we're going to be paying more for even worse service than we're currently getting.
Yeah, well, here's the good news is that you're not alone. In the city of St. Louis, and this has been a thorn in the side of the city for a very long time, as if we needed more thorns, because there's a trolley line that they've been trying now to put in to an area of town called the U-City Loop. U-City is University City, and it's right near Washington University, which is a huge, sprawling college campus. And there's this, as there is with every college campus in America, this very funky strip that is maybe a mile from there. And it goes on for maybe about a mile, where there's nothing but restaurants and clubs and fun stuff to do and interesting things. And it's where Blueberry Hill is, which is where Chuck Berry played every month well into his 80s. You know, he was still there and still played a gig in town every month. And so they decided, because there was some history there, I don't know if you're familiar with Meet Me in St. Louis, but clang, clang, clang went the trolley. And so... So they decided that they were going to put in this trolley line and bring it back to the old days. Well, they have been doing the construction, and the tracks are about done 7 years later. 7 years just to lay down the trolley tracks, and they still haven't figured out what they're going to do with the traffic. Because like any area where everything's kind of funky and groovy and there's clubs and restaurants and it's alive and buzzy, there's traffic all the time. So now it's going to be nightmarish trying not to get hit by the trolley or to hit a trolley with your car. So yeah, the whole thing is an absolute mess. I hope it's cool when they finally do start running it, but I have a feeling it's going to be nothing more than the nightmare that it's already been.
Well, I'm glad you brought up that it took 7 years for them to do these trolley tracks. You know about the Second Avenue subway in New York City, right?
Yep.
Yeah. That began in 1972, and it finally opened the first phase, John, the first phase in 2017.
Right. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's the kind of thing where they probably started doing the bidding on that right around the time the Civil War ended. So now that's...
19 was the original proposal.
That is the... Yeah, right. That's on the St. Louis side of the river. Now, where we are in our tiny little burg of Waterloo, Illinois, and I have to start this out by saying I love our town. And I've mentioned this before, our little town of roughly 10,000 people, it's a nice place. It really is. There's a lot of cornfields and shit, but I can deal with that. And so, but there's, you know, the people are great and the town is wonderful. So then something happened. And what happened was I got my utility bill for June. June was really hot. So this is the bill that just got paid. And June was a really hot month. So I figured it was probably going to be a little bit higher than the average utility bill that we get. And it was. But then when I checked my account this morning, there was another $100 taken out in addition to what the already high bill was. So needless to say, I called the city in high dudgeon and said, what gives with my utility bill? And they said, well, didn't you see the revised bill? And I said, no, as a matter of fact, I didn't see the revised bill. Here's what they said happened. They changed the meters from the old style that had the little spinning dial on it to an electronic meter in the middle of June. And what they said was originally they only counted what the new meter racked up for the month of June and didn't count the already racked up old meter kilowatt hours. So when they added them together, they came up with this ungodly high figure. And I thought, I have not had a utility bill anywhere near that high in 5 years since we put new low E glass in the house. Okay. It just doesn't happen. So I got curious and I called my neighbors and I said, hey, was your utility bill? And she stopped me and went, yeah, about $200 higher than it should have been. So all of a sudden we're on the trail of something here and the city is refusing to have any of it. They're refusing to, they obviously screwed something up. Either they got meters that already had a reading on them or there was some kind of screw up somewhere. And they, I mean, what I found out over these last couple of hours, and this story is as old as me checking my account this morning. What I found out is that the city initially got so many phone calls from pissed off people over their revised bill that they put a notice up on their Facebook page and said, well, here's what happened and this is why. And they didn't give any explanation as to why the bills would all be higher by a factor of about 30% than they were in any previous June. They just said, oh, yeah, well, the reason your revised bill came in higher is because we had to add in the old hours.
First of all, where was the revised bill? You never received anything. None of you received anything, correct?
I went back through the mail, and I had. I just disregarded it because I knew I already had the bill. I figured it was another one of those, can we ask you how many times you flush the toilet every month? Because they send these surveys out all the damn time. So I opened it up, and here's the crazy part about it. I went out and read the meter, the brand new meter. So what they're telling me is that in the month of June, we used more kilowatt hours from June 1st to June 30th than we have used since then. So from July 1st until now, they're saying, oh, yeah, and it's a lower number, you know. So there's something seriously wrong. And the city, I mean, there's not that many people here, but the city of Waterloo is about to go into some kind of popular revolt over these utility bills. Everybody is pissed off. So this is going to be an interesting week. I'll have a report for you next week on what we find out over the next 7 days.
Very curious, because, you know, this is the kind of thing that just cannot stand.
Right.
You know, they're going to try and fight. Now, is one question. The utility company, are they tied into the city, or are they a supplier of their own?
Oh, yeah, no. It is the city of Waterloo. They buy the electricity from the big electric conglomerate in the area, which is called Ameren. And so they buy it from them and then resell it to us. But all of the bills come through City Hall, and it's one bill for everything, which is usually pretty convenient. So it's water, sewer, garbage pickup, recycling, and electric and gas. It all comes on one bill.
Pay for garbage pickup?
Yeah, you do too. It's just in some bill somewhere. It's not much. It's like $8 a month or something stupid like that.
No. New York City Department of Sanitation is the New York City Department of Sanitation.
Yeah, but I mean, there's got to be some kind of tax money going to it somewhere.
What we do get tagged for is a little MTA surcharge on our electric bills.
There you go.
Our gas bills. No, the only bills we ever pay is electric and gas.
Okay.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Then again, I'm also an apartment dweller. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that may be
there part. There are no water bills, though, in New York.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
In Jersey, yes. Even if you have an apartment, you do get water, which is just weird to me anyway. But
yeah, I don't know. I don't know any apartment buildings that charge you for water. Usually it's just in your monthly bill. They're like, yeah, whatever.
Well, that's Jersey anyway.
Yeah.
I definitely want to hear the outcome of what portends to happen from here on.
Yeah, bound to be a fun week. Oh, and I have one more kind of local thing to tell you about that's believe it or not, pretty cool, because there's a new commercial coming out for Heineken beer. And I'm not really a Heineken drinker. It's fine, whatever. But their new commercial, and our local reporter for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch is the one who did the write-up on this. So all props go to Joe Holloman. Thank you, Joe, for the article. About a guy by the name of Bernie Hayes. Bernie Hayes, back in the late 60s, was the soul music DJ in St. Louis. If you listened to R&B and soul, you listened to Bernie Hayes. Well, sometime around 1969, he did, as so many others do, he decided, well, you know what? I'm going to cut a record. And he wrote a song, and he cut the record, and cut it here in town at a place that was run by Oliver Sane. He had his own record label that he used to, you know, do all this stuff for. So they produced the song here in town, and it was released eventually on a label called Volt.
No shit.
Yeah. So, Stax Records down in Memphis, their sub-label Volt released this record, the 45, called The Cool Strut. And somehow, I mean, The Cool Strut, it did okay for its time. You know, it was there for a couple of weeks, and then it was just one of those forgotten about things. Somebody in the marketing department that does the advertising for Heineken found it and decided, you know what? This works. So the new Heineken commercial has The Cool Strut off of Volt Records on their new ad. So thanks to them for noticing one of the legendary DJs from St. Louis.
Now give me two balls of mine. One on each side. And the
this on the Complete Stacks Volt Singles box set volume number 2.
There you go.
Wow. I'm going to have to take it out and listen.
It's a good, you know what? It's a great tune. And it's one of those, because he was a DJ, it's almost akin to what the pop version. We were just talking off the air a little bit before we got started about J.P. Richardson, the Big Bopper. And that, you know, he sings a little bit in Chantilly Lace, but it's mostly just him talking. Right. Same thing with the Cool Strut. It's got a hook, but most of it is just Bernie Hayes talking. And that's fine, because you know what? He's great to listen to.
That's almost kind of like, what do you call it also? Tighten Up by Archie Bell and the Drums.
Yes, Tighten Up on the Drums. Another fantastic song.
You know what? I got one more little bit for you. That's actually a postscript to something that we've been reporting for a couple of weeks. The one and only Papa John's on Staten Island.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Good. Good. Screw Papa John's.
I forgot to tell you that last week, because while we were on our way for our weekly fix of spicy fried chicken over at Popeye's,
yeah,
we passed by where Papa John's was, and it is gone. Like a flash. So, go people of Staten Island.
Excellent.
We have the greatest pizza in the world, so, you know, fuck everybody else.
Yep.
Especially that guy.
And some interesting things went on also, again, here in town, but this is a sports story more than anything else, right before the trade deadline, and that the Cardinals got rid of Tommy Pham. He goes down to Tampa Bay for a couple of prospects, so it seems like they're kind of packing it in for the season. But the good news for the Cardinals is that all of a sudden, after they fired Mike Matheny, their interim manager has been doing a hell of a job. They, for the first time this season, won 3 series in a row. And they were all against teams with better records than the Cardinals. So
who is their interim manager?
I'd have to look it up. Honestly, that's how much attention I've been paying. I've just been kind of watching the standings and had already packed it in. But he was a guy who worked in the organization. He was one of the assistants, and they just promoted him. But he's been kicking ass since then.
Well, listen, sometimes you got to get some completely new blood in there.
Yep.
Tonight, the New York Mets are playing the Cincinnati Reds and leading them at this moment. And of course, we will not see Matt Harvey pitch against the Mets.
Mike Schilt is the guy's name.
Never heard of him. Yep. Okay, there you go. Speaking of the trade deadline, wow, what an anticlimax.
Yeah.
I mean, there were, as far as I was concerned, no deals of any merit. Once that whole Manny Machado thing to the Dodgers happened,
right,
there really wasn't much to make big deals for. You knew that the Mets were not going to part with either DeGrom or Syndergaard.
Mm-hmm.
The Mets got rid of Cabrera, who's 33, a free agent at the end of the year, malcontent, wanted off the team last year and went whining to the press, and a useless piece of junk like Jairus Familia. You know, relief pitcher my ass. He can't even close a door.
Right.
You know? So I have no complaints. The Mets did nothing that they needed to do at the trade deadline. I think the one team that truly gave up on everything was the Orioles and shipped a couple of pitchers down to the Braves. The Braves don't look too impressive. Yeah, they beat the Mets 3 out of 4 games, but the Mets beat themselves in 2 of those games.
Right.
They're all one-run games. There were no blowouts this weekend. So, and the Mets did a very nice job on Saturday. There's a guy. Now, I had said at the trade deadline, the Mets should probably trade Zach Wheeler. Well, maybe Wheeler has finally turned the proverbial corner, because he's won his last 4 starts. He has shut out. He's got 2 shutouts in his last 2 starts. You know, he's been pitching the way you had hoped he would pitch, although he's a couple of years late because of all the years spent on the disabled list.
Yeah.
But let's ride this out to the end of the season, and maybe we've got a starting trio of DeGrom, Syndergaard, Wheeler next year, because Steven Matz is a bomb, and I mean a bomb. Last Tuesday night, I had to go on a run for work, and I stopped in a sporting goods store, and I turned and I looked at the TV, and I thought it was a joke or a rerun of some kind, because it was the 3rd inning, and it was 10-0 Washington over the Mets. And I said to the guy at the counter, is this real? What happened? Who caused this abomination? And he said, Matz. Now, Matz has been completely up and down like a yo-yo. It's like the psychological thing with him. And the game was 25-4 was the final score.
Yeah, it was. I knew there was a 25-run like mercy rule game out there somewhere.
So bad, John, that they had to get Jose Reyes to pitch a couple of innings. Okay? And that's all of a sudden is on the disabled list again.
Ugh.
Now, there's your weak link. You know, the two guys that couldn't cut it were obviously Harvey and definitely Mats, because Mats, I think it's more, it's not just the physical aspect and the constant shoulder problems, but you watch him on the mound and he starts talking to himself. And once he starts talking to himself, you know it's downhill from there.
Right.
So, enough said about the Mets. And I don't really care about what's going to happen in hockey because the Rangers don't look all that impressive, and I highly doubt they're going to make the playoffs this year. So if they do, I'd be pleasantly shocked, but I put no hope into anything they do right now.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's going to be a toughie. And, I mean, it's probably going to be a toughie even with the new kid the Sabres got for them as well, because there's just too many holes in that team right now for them to really crawl themselves back up out of the cellar at this point.
Now, there is one thing I did want to go back to, because I don't want to get too far away from the topics, but something else that de Blasio had done in this last week, which I personally found questionable, to say the least, and keeping in concert with his antics, like going to Germany for a socialist's rally when a police officer was murdered in her vehicle,
uh-huh.
Or going to Mexico, and of course his illegal crossing of the border. He decided to send 15 or 16 lawyers down to Texas to help with illegal immigrant families. These are lawyers whose services could, in fact, be utilized better here. You know, there are plenty of illegal immigrant families that are here. You know, why aren't you focusing on them? Why are you sending them to Texas?
Right.
You know, it's just food for thought yet again in the chicanery that is the de Blasio administration. There's another Staten Island story, and this one you could probably find online, because it shocked me when I saw it on the local news. You know, our cable system here, which used to be Time Warner, is now Charter Communications operating as Spectrum, has a local news channel 24 hours a day, and you know, I watched in the morning so I can get my daily dose of the weather first and foremost and local news. There is a gas station that we've stopped at many a time. On videotape is caught a fellow getting out of the car, trying to fill a can with gas, and setting it on fire.
Ugh.
Now, the remarkable thing is almost as quickly as he set that fire, the extinguishing system just came right down and put it out. But as he lit the fire, because he had gotten gasoline on himself, he set himself on fire because there was a flash. And you see him get burned. He definitely got burned on his legs and probably on his arms. It took the police upward of, I think, 3-4 days to get him, finally. But the minute this video footage surfaced, because it's so clear, and you can see him 100%. Even this is one of the few times that Facebook actually served a purpose. I'm part of a group called St. George Neighborhood by the Ferry.
Okay.
And people saw this footage and said, wait a minute, we need to start contacting the hospitals and see if this guy is there, you know, for burns.
Yeah.
And that is how they tracked him down and caught him.
Smart. I mean, you know he's not going to let that go, sure.
Now, is he going to be charged with attempted terrorism? We don't know. He was from Brooklyn. And I don't need to tell you his name, but it's what you would predict. Is that a diplomatic way of putting it?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, yeah, but it was here on Staten Island, and I'm happy to say that no one else was hurt and no damage was done. So, you know, the gas station was crowded like usual because it's on one of the main drags by one of the bigger intersections that lead to the expressway, and it's got this very popular car wash attached to it.
Let me see if I can guess how much sympathy you have for this guy for burning himself. Isn't anybody going to help that poor man?
Oh, I'm sure there's a few snowflakes out there that would probably do so.
Yep.
So now I want to do something else that we've been in concert with, no pun intended. Following up on our publicists who suck reports.
Oh, yeah.
I've got a left field one that actually has a happy ending. There was this band whose guitarist got in contact with me a couple of months ago and said, we've been around for a while. We're putting out something new in the fall, and I was wondering if you might be interested. And I said, you know what? When it's ready, send it to me. I'll listen to it, evaluate it, and I'll let you know. And I checked out some of their stuff, and it was good. He wrote me back to follow up and saying, you know, we're in the studio now finishing up. We'd very much like to send you our stuff. And I told him exactly what I need as far as assets go to make a premiere happen. Mm-hmm. He sent me a date of when it's going to be ready. His reply email said, I'm going to loop in our publicist. And he copies her, you know, she's copied on this email. And I wrote him back privately and I said, listen, we have had far too many times, and especially in the last few months, where publicists get involved, especially after a musician has gotten directly in touch with me.
Yeah.
And he had mentioned, he jokingly said in his email, you know, whenever I go rogue, right?
Yeah.
And I said to him, if you want to make this happen, I would recommend you don't loop her in. I said, I don't know her. She may be a very fine publicist, but here's some of the things that have occurred recently mm-hmm. because of publicists after the fact. So he said, you know what then? I will send you everything on my own. And we will get this readied and up, and boom, that's what you want to hear. If you're going to do this, stick with it to the end, you know?
Yeah.
Don't bring in the third wheel. So I'm very happy to say that I have something new to look forward to in a couple of weeks.
Good. Good. All right. Well, I'm looking for some new music anyway, and we'll get to the In Our Head segment a little bit later on and talk some more music at that point. But yeah, I've been dying for something that at least has some kind of meat to it for a little while. So yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing what that's all about as well.
I was going to say that, you know, I love Americana and, you know, acoustic stuff and pastoral sounds and so on, but, you know, it would be nice to get something that's back in the pop vein again,
yep.
Although... You know, we do have, at least I have up on Popdose, a review up, and now it's officially up, about a sort of a power pop sound that you and I are familiar with. It's the biography of Chris Bell.
Oh, nice.
And this was, it took, as I mentioned last week in the teaser bit, it took Rich Tupica, the author, 5 years to compile this. And believe me, when you say the word painstaking, that may be understating it, because, you know, here's someone who was to a degree an enigma, who has been deceased for 40 years.
Yep.
You know, and there wasn't that much available about him. And to this point, we pretty much know all that people, quote, want us to know about him. Because there's all the rumors about his private life and his sexual confusions, et cetera, et cetera. We knew that he had a very healthy, and I'm saying that sarcastically, but with no disrespect meant, a very healthy career using drugs and alcohol.
Right.
You know, he was a product of his time is what he was. But the thing is, he made, even though not that much music, it left an impact that's now been reverberating for 40 plus years. From the first Big Star Records to the solo, well, the one solo single that was released just before his death, I Am the Cosmos, You and Your Sister, to the posthumous I Am the Cosmos, and now some of the things that have finally been unearthed in this last year of Chris Bell, like the tracks that are on Looking Forward. You know, the things that he had done with Ice Water and Rock City, you know, you could see when you go and you listen to the music of Chris Bell, you can actually follow the evolution, which is wonderful. It's very rare that you get such a complete picture.
Yeah.
You know, but again, you know, there's so much that's already out there that unfortunately, try as he might to avoid it, you know, Rich had to go over territory that's already been walked upon, you know. What's great about the book itself is that it's written in a conversational manner. That's how it tells the story. It doesn't tell it in those kinds of cold and almost impersonal, you know, well, Chris Bourne was born in Memphis, Tennessee, blah, blah, blah way.
Yeah.
He gets right to the heart of the matter. And it's not just about Chris Bell. It's about Big Star as well. I mean, the official title of the book is indeed There Was a Light, The Cosmic History of Chris Bell and the Rise of Big Star. So, you know, it has to be said, it's not just the one person. Now, there are many pictures that have not been seen before, which is terrific. The one thing that I got from this book, and I'd heard it in passing, and it was just as you and I actually were meeting for the first time, because I had, you know, we'd already done the first show, and we'll get to that shortly.
Yeah, yeah.
But I went to the premiere, one of the premiere nights for Nothing Can Hurt Me. And it was the night that the Q&A was done at the I really refuse to call it the IFC Film Center. It's the Waverly Theater.
Attaboy.
And one of the questions that was asked was about Chris Bell. And the reply was, and you don't really think that much about it when you hear it. You just kind of smile because you're hearing for once something different. But Chris wasn't the delicate flower everybody thinks he was. And that's what you take away when you read through this book.
Okay.
He wasn't this fragile, tortured artist in the studio. No, 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 no. Let's be very clear about one thing. Chris Bell started Big Star. Chris Bell brought Alex Chilton into the band. Chris Bell knew in his mind what he wanted for bandmates. And when they were in the studio, because Chris Bell had had so many years experience working the machines at Ardent and was probably John Fry's best student, as it were.
Yeah.
Chris Bell was the head of Big Star. He was the boss and in the studio in control. He was a son of a bitch in that studio. He worked them mercilessly. He was a perfectionist to the degree of being verbally abusive. And at a point, all of those guys, when they finally were getting to that degree of maybe he should leave the group while he was going through his whole, I can't believe the, you know, the spotlight is on Alex Chilton and not my songs as well. He treated them like servants.
Okay.
The studio. So you get a very, and you know what? That actually made me happy to hear because it belies the whole tortured artist myth that becomes, it goes then to parody, really.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the human side of him, you know? It's a very good read. The writing by Rich Tupica to turn this into a flowing conversation that gives you as complete a picture as you can get,
yeah,
is remarkable. And the fact that he was able to get as many of the Bell siblings as possible is even more credit to him. David Bell, from what I know, is a lovely man who is completely agreeable and accessible, but he got Sarah and he got Cindy to sit down as well. And I think it's just a really, really, it's a fascinating read.
Yeah.
So,
well, and I'm glad you said that about the style that it's written in as well, because there is nothing in this world worse than a rock and roll biography that is stilted. Because if you're going to write about rock and roll, you had better love it. I mean, you had better love it like the musicians love it, and like the producers, or like the people who gave their blood, sweat, and tears to rock and roll love it. And if you love it, how do we talk to each other about it? I mean, you know, that's the language we use. It's all storytelling and conversation. And it's, I mean, that's wrapped up in the mythos of the entire genre. And if you can't do that, go be an accountant.
Right. You're absolutely right. You know, and when you get an antiseptic and dare I say, run of the mill rock biography.
Yep.
You're kind of going to roll your eyes. That's why I veer away from any books about the Beatles. Yeah. Unless it's as technical as you can possibly get.
Yeah.
Like that wonderful book that was written specifically about Revolver. You know? That, okay, I will completely devour and sink my teeth into.
Right.
By the way, yesterday was, in fact, the 52nd anniversary of Revolver. But
that's right. So,
you know, you're also – the other thing is when you read a book like this about this particular person, you stop and think, and this is what I like. It touches you because you're thinking, wait a minute, it's 40 years that he's gone, but the way that everybody talks about him and remembers him, even when he was being completely insufferable, which he could, he was very good at being, they talk about him with such a love and fondness and that kind of, I wish he was still here.
Yeah.
You know, even in their 60s, these folks still have that kind of memory. And that's a really touching moment. You know, that's what I think is the most captivating thing about this book. He gave another dimension to Chris Bell that was slightly stilted and definitely misshapen in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Right, you strip that away and tell us what the story is. That's great. Now, see, now I've got to get what's the full title again?
It is "There Was a Light: the Cosmic History of Chris Bell and the Rise of Big Star."
Nice. All right, good deal. Yeah, looking forward to sinking my own teeth into that one in the fairly near future. And before we step away from music for a little while, because we've got a whole bunch to get to, and I guess this is kind of staying in the musical genre, there was more news this week about the continuing recovery of Demi Lovato. What's going on?
Oh, she had a setback.
Did she?
You notice my voice is dripping with sarcasm. It's called, you're in rehab and you keep relapsing. Okay?
Yeah.
Let us not waste our time or energy cutting her any kind of slack. She's what you call a fuck-up. Let's just leave it at that and have done with it, people. And I don't give a damn that she's supposed to be on these stupid MTV Video Awards coming up. If you drag her out there, you are really – I mean, it was bad enough when you had Snoop Dogg coming out on stage when the cops were trying to get him for murder.
Yeah.
You were protecting him. You were aiding and abetting. You bring out this little junky girl on stage to either dance to a pre-taped song, or you try to give her an award, you're culpable in helping what I foresee is a pretty dire ending.
Not only are you culpable, you're reinforcing the behavior. you're telling her, we love you as a junkie. Wow, what a message. No, it's not going to work.
Yeah, and she's not a real ratings grabber anyway. The great thing is that you and I are both safe from ever having listened to any of her music, so we couldn't talk knowledgeably about it.
Well, right.
And that makes me feel good.
Yeah, but...
Because we're all 17-year-old girls.
Well, yeah, there's that. But and not that I'm making any kind of comparison as far as the talent or impact is concerned. However, there is an analog to that because my weekly music conversation on the radio show this week, it was with Robbie Krieger. And I was never a big fan of the Doors. The Doors are fine, you know.
That makes two of us.
Yeah, I they're fine. I'm not going to hack on them and call them terrible or anything like that. I just never really got into them the way that I know some people. In fact, one of my best friends is a huge fan and has been forever. And I just never quite got there. But he was a really interesting conversation. Now, the background to the conversation is that it was 50 years ago also, another anniversary, it was 50 years ago this week, that Waiting for the Sun came out. And that was their first number one album in the States. It was the first time an album of theirs charted in the UK, and it had their first number one hit, Hello, I Love You. So it was, as much as the Doors can be landmark, it was a landmark achievement for them. And if you know anything about the recording of that album, it was a monstrosity from the beginning. I mean, they just hated it. And it took far too long and way too many takes. And the producer was being a dick. And it was a horrible experience. So my first question to him was anything about recording Waiting for the Sun easy? And he immediately said no. But he went very quickly into, and the reason for that, in addition to everything else you've heard, is that that was when Jim started drinking. And he said, look, Jim did a lot of drugs. And when Jim was high or when Jim was on LSD, he was a great writer and he was kind of fun to be around. And he started drinking and it went to shit. And him and all of his drinking buddies would come into the studio and they would just sit there and get hammered and we wouldn't get any work done. And we spent weeks and weeks and weeks trying to get anything out of him. And he said, if you listen to, and there was one particular cut he singled out, 5 to 1, He said Jim was obviously drunk when they recorded 5 to 1.
5 to 1, baby. 1 in 5. No one here gets out alive now. You get yours, baby. I'll get mine. Gonna make it, baby, if we try.
But it just kind of fits the vibe of the song. You know, so they left it. They were like, all right, well, I guess that's good enough. But the point of that is, and the connection back to Demi Lovato, is that it's okay to recognize that talented people can be shit human beings. I mean, there's no sugarcoating it. They can get into situations where they are just useless and worthless to themselves and to everybody else around them. And to pretend that it's other, you know, to kind of polish it up because you have respect for somebody's talent is doing them a disservice, and it always ends up with them dead. So yeah, if they put her on the MTV Video Music Awards, I think she's that much closer to a corpse.
A couple of things. One, you brought up the whole thing about shit human beings, even though, you know, the Beatles are always looked upon as those wonderful, cheerful, you know, delightful mop tops. Those were four of the nastiest human beings you will ever come across.
Right.
They were horrible individuals. And they started to show how horrible they were by the time they all reached puberty and grew their mustaches.
Yeah.
You know, in 67. Lennon was a dick. You know, and I'm not a fan of Lennon anyway, so I don't have a problem saying that.
A spouse-beating dick on top of everything else.
Right. So that's, you know, Harrison had a propensity for wearing Nazi uniforms.
Yeah.
You know, real fucking charming.
Right. You know,
Paul and Ringo I won't pick on because they're still here.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Beatles were dicks. The Rolling Stones were a lot nicer than that. Yeah, but of course the juxtaposition of images is that, oh, the Rolling Stones are bad.
They were the bad boys, yeah.
Andrew Luke Oldham told them to be opposite of the Beatles.
Right.
But those guys, but here again, you know, the Beatles, for all intents and purposes, what one could, you know, approximate as being white trash. They were all poor white trash.
Yep.
Right? The Rolling Stones were all very middle class, you know?
Right. Yeah, they were comfortable. They were the London boys and, you know, they juxtaposed against the kids who grew up in Liverpool and had nothing.
Michael Philip Jagger was studying to be an accountant, I think, right. Which is not surprising knowing how much he loves money.
And John Lennon got kicked out of every school he ever went to. And yeah, I mean, the reason why it worked when Brian Epstein put them all in spiffy suits is because that had to be their image. Otherwise, they were just a bunch of crap white trash, like you said.
Right. All they do is play Chuck Berry covers in a shitty Liverpool club, and that's the end of that.
Right. Yeah, so...
One factual little thing, though. Light My Fire was, in fact, their first number one. It wasn't Hello, I Love You.
Oh, really? Okay.
Right? Yeah. Maybe their first European number one.
Could very well be, yeah.
That the album that also has Wintertime Love?
I think so. I'd have to go back and look at the track list again. Again, I was never that into it as a fan.
The only reason I reference it, and I've yet to do, is that's where Julian Cope said he pinched Bouncing Babies from.
Okay.
Almost word for note. I want to hear that. I want to figure out where he may have done that.
Yep.
So, yeah, Cope is one of those big Doors fans. I never got it, like so many other groups. I just, you know, I have the records. I just, with the exception of the first album, which is almost like a greatest hits album.
Yeah.
And I like the Soft Parade a lot because probably my favorite Doors song is on there, Wishful Sinful, which is a Robbie Krieger song.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a masterpiece.
And by the way, Krieger was very nice to talk to. Just for the Doors fans out there who are listening to the podcast, he was very open and he was just really easygoing. And I guess at this point, why wouldn't you be?
Well, I've never heard anything really negative about him or Manzarek.
Yeah.
Or even Densmore, even though Densmore's now kind of got the reputation for being a little bit more crabby.
That's simply because of his protectionism about the Doors material and the fact that he doesn't want to go back and be a part of it anymore. And one of the things that we did get into in the conversation, which is, by the way, at 550ktrs.com, a little plug there for the radio show, is that I ask him about those last 5 years of Manzarek's life when the two of them, Krieger and Manzarek, got back together and started touring around as the Doors of the 21st Century and all of that. And it got a really heartfelt response out of him from that. And he said, you know, it really is now that's one of the most special times to him, because it was when he left all of the fusion jazz stuff that he had been doing behind and went back to his own roots, and he got to do it with his best friend. So yeah, not bad.
I think that's pretty sweet. You know, if you get a chance to do that, then, you know, more power to you.
Yep.
Now, speaking of radio shows, let's talk about a little show once upon a time called Overnight America, since this is indeed the 5th anniversary show.
Yes.
Man, we have had a lot of fun. A lot of fun. And yeah, and I'm talking about when we were doing it on Overnight America, and that was only within a 20-minute period.
Right.
And it was pretty specialized. It was 90% pop dose stuff. You know, it was very content-controlled, self-editing, self-censoring. You know, the show's always had a rhythm and a power to it. But I just want to say thank you for having read the article that I wrote about Maxwell's and for wanting me to be on the show.
Well, yes. Yeah.
You know, look what we've managed to do since then.
And the feeling is very much mutual. I mean, the reason these conversations to me are as easy as they are is because we get each other. You know, it all makes sense. And the stuff that you write and the things that we get into talking about, whether or not they end up on the page, and this is the other cool thing about where we've been since the dawn of the podcast, is that the things that we get into talking about that have no direct connection back to Popdose, other than the fact that we're on it, is to me, it's a sort of a liberating thing. And, you know, again, we just get each other. We can disagree about shit. We don't much, you know, because we're kind of on the same page about most things, but it's all cool. It's all okay. And thank you for being the groovy human being you are.
Well, believe me, the feeling is very neutral on that front. I do love the fact that what we're doing is, in funny enough that you brought it up, that it doesn't appear on Popdose, because Popdose is supposed to be about, quote, pop culture. So we are, in fact, going right across the boards of pop culture.
Right.
If you think about it, you know, whether it's local, because there are things that are indigenous to where we live and deal with, you know, and talking about something like Demi Lovato, or talking about the Doors or baseball, you know, all of it's part of popular culture.
Yep.
And
it's where we live.
And I want to point out the fact to all of you good people who are listening to this very special 5th anniversary show that, A, we have not talked about politics tonight, except for my few shots at de Blasio and John's displeasure with City Hall and Waterloo. But you know what? We're not going to, because it's our 5th anniversary. So that's number one. Number two, today is also the birthday of Mr. Frank Giannini, who is a wonderful human being. He is the drummer of the Bongos. He is my very dear friend, my very good friend. Frank, I love you. I hope you have a wonderful birthday. Were it not for Frank that night at Maxwell's, I would have never gotten in, let alone been on stage with the Bongos, because it was he who put me on the guest list.
Yeah.
And made that night possible, and made, as silly as it sounds, for somebody who is at that state and age, 48? Yeah, I was 48. Made a 48-year-old's dream come true by me being on the one stage that I'd never played on. By the way, if you don't know the story, I'm going to just tell you the ending of the story. The night that Maxwell's closed in Hoboken, out of everyone I knew, I was the only one that never played there. Even my former bandmates in the Punchline played there in other bands. I'd never played there. I always said, well, Maxwell's will always be there. The Punchline will get back together. Well, when they announced that they were closing, I was like, well, fuck, that's not going to happen. On the morning of the show, the final show, which the Bongos were playing, and when I asked Frank if he could let me know when tickets would be on sale, he's like, fuck that, you're on the guest list. As I was getting ready to go to the show that night, he texted me to say, the last song that we're going to play tonight is Thank You Friends by Big Star, and you're going to join us on stage. And so until last year, actually, there was footage on Popdose, and it was available because it was on NJ.com originally, or one of the NJ.com sister sites, of that final song where, you know, I wouldn't watch it, actually. Not couldn't, but I wouldn't watch it, because at the very end you see me and Richard Barone hugging each other, and it makes me very weepy in a good way, but it makes me very weepy.
Yeah.
But sure enough, there I was on stage with the four members of the Bongos, Nick Celeste, who's a wonderful singer, guitarist, songwriter, a dear friend, a dear, dear man. Ira and Georgia from Yola Tango, and Glenn Mercer from the Feelies doing Thank You Friends by Big Star. And it was a moment I will never forget. I couldn't – first of all, Richard made us do a group bow when the song was over, so I was part of that.
Yeah.
And I just remember I couldn't see the audience, but it was just so loud, and they were cheering and a lot of like flashes, but I couldn't see because I had tears in my eyes. And it was just a very beautiful, emotional night. It made a dream come true for me because, as I said in that article, so there it was. It was the very last night of Maxwell's. The Bongos, the band that started it all off at Maxwell's, were the last band standing on that stage. The Bongos were doing a Big Star song. And there I was on stage singing this Big Star song with the Bongos at a place that I loved and that meant so much to me.
Yeah.
And that's what the article was about. It was called Maxwell's Last Dance, the finale. And if I remember correctly, as Jeff had said to me in his email, you'd seen the article and read it and, hey, I want him on the show.
Yep.
And that was it. And so from that night, in that hot August night, when you called me, we did it on the phone, and I was sitting in my kitchen trying not to sound like a complete and utter moron. You know, here we are running the country subversively, I might add.
Yep.
Because, as everybody knows, we're going to take over sooner than later.
Of course.
It's going to be a wonderful coup d'etat. But no, back to all seriousness, you know, it was 5 years ago that we did that first episode. It was days after the Maxwell's article, and here we are doing Radio City, which I loved Overnight America, but I love this even more because this is ours.
Yeah.
This is all ours, and we're constricted to no one and nothing.
Indeed.
So.
Indeed. So we, now, with that in mind, we can go after a couple of major corporations and beat the living crap out of them.
Yes.
Because now you're going to have to remind me, because I've told this story to so many people and I put it out on Facebook, so I'm not sure if I told this one on last week's podcast. I don't know if it had happened by then. Had I been punished by Facebook yet?
Yes.
So we did talk about that.
We did.
Yeah.
We did talk about that. But, you know, Facebook this week also happened to disclose the fact that they had found some, quote, left-wing organizations trying to influence the midterm elections.
Mm-hmm.
No shit.
Yeah, no kidding.
And by the way, there's a postscript to your Facebook run-in. A friend of mine received the same warning that you did. This is not a joke. All he did was post the link to one of the songs off of Surfer Rosa by the Pixies. So it's a thumbnail-sized picture of the cover.
Yeah.
And they gave him the same warning they gave you.
Right.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Oh, and I received a note back. This is the one update on that. And if you didn't listen to last week's podcast, I posted in the 10 albums that mean something to you, the 10 albums in 10 days thing that was so popular on Facebook. I put in Led Zeppelin's Houses of the Holy. And that cover violated their community standards. Now, for reference, again, Nazis don't. Neo-Nazis don't violate their community standards. They came out with that a couple of weeks ago. But for some reason, the Led Zeppelin Houses of the Holy album does. And I wrote them a nasty note back and said, guys, this is a classic album that's in every record store in the world. And this is idiocy. How can you say this violates your community standards? And they sent me a note back saying, we don't care. It still violates our community standards. We're taking it down.
They really are a bunch of dicks.
Yep.
Zuckerberg's a dick, and he'll get his. Don't worry. They all
him and Papa John, you know, cut from the you same know, cloth.
I got one more for you for a corporation. Charter Communications operating a spectrum has been told by the New York State government they have to cease and desist and get rid of sell their licenses to a different cable provider for violation of numerous infractions that stem from the deals that they have made. And they say that they're going to fight this, that they love being in New York. So
yeah, I'll bet they do.
very interesting.
I'll bet they love being in New York. They're making money hand over fist.
You know, well, dealing with Spectrum on a daily basis, because that's what we operate on at my job, they are beyond incompetent, and it is mortifying when they say, well, New York, and this is not a joke, one of the techs on the phone said, well, New York's a special market. I'm like, New York is your central market.
Right.
Are you fucking retarded?
Right.
Well, it is your hub.
Yeah. And their service is crap, and everything about them is just lousy. So it may end up being a very good thing that they're being kicked out of New York. But in the meantime,
Let's hope that, what do you call it, doesn't come in, though, Comcast.
Yeah, that's true. It's
not here.
Get rid of the cable anyway. Just stream, man. Everything's going that way.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, I'm a creature of habit. I like
that. Oh, no, I hear you, man.
Inch TV now and watching, you know, for the umpteenth time, Nothing Can Hurt Me, or REM by MTV or some shit like that. Yeah. So.
Well, and going back to the Overnight America reference, that, of course, was a product of CBS Radio, and we have CBS Television Network, which, you know, you look at what happened with Roger Ailes, and you think, okay, Fox News Channel may be a cesspool. Not maybe, it is. It is the cesspool of news. It's just crap. It's terrible. And yet, when their guy got caught grabbing ass, they fired him. They got rid of him. He's, you know, he was gone before he died. And so at least they had that kind of integrity. CBS, on the other hand, it's like, well, yeah, our guy got caught grabbing ass, and there's a litany of complaints against him. But, you know, we're going to keep him around for a little while. How about a little integrity, CBS?
Well, speaking of CBS,
uh-huh.
You know, last week was the celebrity roast of Bruce Willis. Now, can you please explain to me, in as rational a way as you can, why was it carried? Of course, it's going to be on Comedy Central, which is where these celebrity roasts are. But
right.
Why was it carried simultaneously on MTV, BET, and VH1 as well?
I have no answer for you.
What's up with CBS? Are they that short on material? Actually, I think the answer would be yes.
Oh, well, no, hang on. I think it's a little more nefarious than that, believe it or not, because it's not just that they're out of material. They're trying to shove people into buying CBS All Access. They're moving all of their decent programming over to the streaming service, which they charge a monthly fee for. So if they put Nothing But Pablum out on all of their networks, well, then you'll have no choice. Which, by the way, gives me another reason to hack away on CBS, because I have been saying for many years that somebody needs to make the movie out of John Parsons. John Whiteside Parsons is the guy who started Jet Propulsion Labs. And I know that sounds very dry and boring, and why would you make a movie out of that guy? He was also an incredible weirdo. He was involved in a sex cult in the 1950s, back in the late 40s and early 50s in California, and was there when another guy who joined his sex cult in California, a guy by the name of L. Ron Hubbard, came in and stole Jack Parsons' wife and then went off and started Scientology. It's a fascinating story. And John Parsons, by the way, the end of the story is that he blew himself up. And nobody is really sure to this day, because he was constantly blowing shit up and he was experimenting with rocket fuel and all of that. And nobody is sure to this day whether he killed himself because he had reason to do so, or whether it was just a screw up in the lab and he blew himself sky high. But it's a fascinating story. And CBS All Access has a thing called Strange Angel, based on the book of the same name, that's the story of John Whiteside Parsons. And we're now six episodes in, and I'm still kind of waiting for something to happen. I mean, to take a story that is that tabloid juicy and turn it into something this dull is just pathetic to the highest order. And they're making us pay for this service.
Well, people are paying now to see that stupid Star Trek, you know, the PC version of Star Trek.
Yeah, that's true. And by the way, if that made you interested in Jack Parsons, go read the book. It's called Strange Angel. Go read the book. It's awesome.
I think you're better off reading a book anyway.
Well, but, always,
you know,
yeah.
You know, that's completely different rant for about 2 or 3 hours.
Yes.
I noticed that this weekend, This is how dire this new Star Trek thing. Now, first of all, I hate Star Trek. I will make this very clear. I am very anti-Trekkie because I am a Star Wars fanboy, dyed in the wool. You know, I'm not into science fiction as is, but Star Wars over Star Trek any day of the week. I it's just me. So there's this show, Star Trek. What's it called? Star Trek.
Now I don't remember.
Whatever. It's the new Star Trek. It's a very PC thing. You know, it plucks from every one of the possible little, you know, precious petal flowers that you can muster and put together on a Starfleeter. But now they've gone back to the original Star Trek because that wonderful actor, Anson Mount, who you will remember from Hell on Wheels.
Yeah.
Has now joined the cast as get ready for this one. Are you sitting for this, John?
I am.
Well, stand up so you can sit down. Captain Pike.
Oh, wow. We're going back and mining that one, huh?
All I can say is you better watch yourself, Anson, because remember what happened to the last Captain Pike.
Yep.
They not only fried him to the point where all he was just a wooden dummy sitting in that chair, but then they nailed him to the cross when he played Jesus.
I forgot Jack about that. Yeah, right. Oh, too much. But yeah, the whole thing has fallen apart. And CBS is lousy, and they've been lousy for a long time. And they're too damn big, and they don't know what they're doing anymore. It's a rudderless ship.
It is, and it's galling to me that, you know, they have all these channels that they've ruined in the process. So is NBC. I mean, you know, we can go through all the ones that they bought up and destroyed
right.
in the process.
Yep.
But, you know, Comedy Central sucks. There's nothing on Comedy Central worth a damn, except maybe when it comes back. And even then, you have to take it in small doses. South Park and Detroiters. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry, Tosh. Tosh.0.
Right.
That's it. Otherwise, Comedy Central sucks, and you can stick that. MTV, of course, has, you know, Jersey Shore. And Ridiculousness, which is back now. So.
Okay.
Otherwise, fuck you, MTV. VH1. Fuck you, BT, fuck you. What have you got? Nothing. Reruns of Martin? That ain't very black. That's just lame, and it was on Fox originally.
Right.
So, save it. Yeah, CBS, but that's television for you on the whole now. Television has just reached its absolute nadir. It really has.
Yeah.
I can't even tell you the stuff. You know what I spend most of my time watching now? ID Discovery, all the crime shows, because they're far more fascinating and they're based in fact.
Right, right. There's a reality to it, so it makes it a little bit easier to take. And even with, you know, the stuff that's coming out with, Netflix started to do some interesting things in terms of series. And, you know, it was interesting to see whether, okay, is this a series they're going to let us binge, or is this one they're going to roll out on a weekly basis? But now all they're doing with their new stuff is they're recycling stuff from BBC. There's probably 30 British TV series that are up on Netflix right now as Netflix originals. No, they're not. They're shit you stole from BBC. Right.
Yeah. That's all I have to say about it.
Exactly.
So that very neatly segues us into...
In our heads, yes. The way we end this thing every week here on the podcast. And the In Our Heads thing this week, I spent a lot of time thinking about this because I was trying to figure out a way to work this in. But our band that we have been trying to get up to speed to where we feel comfortable going out and gigging decided to add one in this week because they had been on me. You know, we want you to add in some more songs, and, you know, we keep expanding this set list. It's the same thing that happens with every band in the initial offing. Everybody keeps coming up with ideas for new songs instead of hammering out the ones that we've got and getting really good at them. So I finally relented and said, all right, fine. You want a song? Let's do a song. Let's do Good Girls Don't by The Knack.
Adolescent dream, schoolboy stuff, a sticky sweet romance. And she makes you wanna scream, wishing you could get inside her pants. So you bend her sides away while you're squeezing her. You thought you heard her saying, good girls don't. Good girls don't. But she'd be telling you, good girls don't. But I
I was surprised to find out, because we're all roughly the same age. I'm 48. Our other singer is 44. She's wonderful, by the way. And the drummer and the bass player are a little bit older than us. They're probably another 10 years down the road. And I was stunned when I said, yeah, let's do Good Girls Don't by the Knack. It's just, you know, a good nothing pop song that just sounds fantastic and gets everybody moving. And all three of them stared at me and went, what? And I thought, really? So, of course, immediately upon playing it for them, they were all like, wow, that song's great. Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. There's no doubt about it. And I started thinking about it because our guitar shop here in town, which is a legendary guitar shop worldwide, Killer Vintage Guitars, they have a line of T-shirts. And the T-shirts are all very un-PC, and they're very funny. In fact, you may have seen one of their designs. If you've ever seen the Lee Harvey Five, which is the shot of Jack Ruby shooting Oswald. But instead of that, it's Oswald holding a microphone like he's singing, and Jack Ruby's got a guitar in his hands and all of this stuff instead of a gun, and they just made it like a combo out of it. It's hilarious. That's one of Killer Vintage's T-shirts. And they've got another one of Tojo standing there holding a Les Paul, and it says, I Reich Res Pauls on the bottom of the T-shirt. It's stuff like that. But the one they've got that I like the best is that shot from Vietnam where the guy is kneeling in the center of the road, and he's about to be shot in the head. And you know the picture I'm talking about, that iconic image of the VC.
Yeah, of course.
So what they did is, as he's got his hands on top of his head, in one of his hands, he's holding a harmonica. And the caption on the photograph says, no, you can't sit in. And again, anybody who's ever been in a band knows that one guy who's in the audience and he's got his harmonica with him. And he's like, can I sit in? No, you can't.
I have a friend who actually had one of those vests for his harmonica.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, wow.
I should say harmonicas. Yeah, no, he had the
seven of them.
Special. Yeah.
Right. Like, but yeah, but the great thing about that is that as much heat as the harmonica takes for just being a nothing instrument that any dipshit can play, because you can't possibly hit a note on a harmonica that doesn't fit the key, as much shit as it takes for that, there are those songs like Good Girls Don't, because they didn't have to put a harmonica in that song, but it's not as good a song if you don't have that there. It just fits. It's
who's
like
playing the harmonica on your version.
The singer, the other singer, the girl.
Okay.
Cause I'm singing lead on that one, and she'll sing the harmonies and play the harmonica. But, the thing about it is, you know, with songs like that and with, I mean, even going as far back as Love Me Do, there are those cuts that, without that instrument in them, even as much of a joke as it is to people who actually play, that they just wouldn't work if it didn't have a harmonica in it. So I want you to think about the harmonica for just a minute and add to that list of songs.
I Remember You by Frank Ifield.
Yes.
That's a, you, before you even said add to the list, you know, I was rolling out my list in my head.
I remember. You're the one who said I love you too. Yes, I do. Didn't you know? I remember too a distant bell and stars that fell like the rain out of the blue.
I mean, that's one of my favorite songs of all time, you know, and it's a beautiful melody, and it's made even sweeter and a little melancholic by the emotion that comes out through that harmonica.
Yep.
So, can't be, that one is the, you know, the apex of all, to me, that's the apex of all of them.
Yep.
Hey Baby by Bruce Channel, you know, that's another one, which I think is where, the Beatles ripped off their little coda for their cover of Chains. It kind of sounds like
right.
Hey Baby.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
There's a Place, I think, utilizes the harmonica very briefly in it.
Yeah.
But what do you call it? Thank You Girl.
Is
better moments that the Beatles have with a harmonica.
Yes. because with the O's at the beginning of the song and everything else, and that acting is a kind of a counterpoint to that. It's right. Great. And they use it again. It's sparing, but it's there.
They also use it really well and sparingly in the right plot. Right places on I'm a Loser. But not just the Beatles. I mean, you know, when Dylan played harmonica, yeah, who cares? Now, Brian Jones played the harmonica like a motherfucker.
Right, right. Yeah.
He played it like an old black man.
And you know who took a lot of heat in the initial offing for his harmonica playing by the critics? And we all know, critics, right. But they just torched him for his harmonica playing on the early Zeppelin stuff as Robert Plant. And you listen back to it, and I mean, try and think of When the Levee Breaks without the harmonica breaking.
I was about to say, it's funny because I had four sticks going through my mind this morning, Washing the dishes.
Right.
Listen to the records by the Yardbirds. Listen to Keith Relf's harp playing.
Yep.
Okay. You know, listen to the live version of Baba O'Reilly, you know, where the violin bit is supposed to come in at the end, and instead it's Daltrey playing those notes.
Right.
On the he's basically delivering the violin part on harmonica. And it's fucking incredible.
So let's take a left turn here, and I'm just going to throw a name at you because I have no idea what your answer is going to be to this. I would take, you know, a positive or negative response with equal aplomb. John Popper.
He's just there. I mean, Okay. Technically good, but he's just the Blues Traveler is like, what's that other fucking band? Spin Doctors. Right. You know?
For similar time period, yeah.
Yeah, these shitty, you know, Wetlands bands from the early 90s. So I don't really think about it. Listen, Billy Joel does a very nice, sympathetic bit of harmonica playing on Piano Man.
Sure.
It makes the song.
Right. Right. You know? Yeah, there needed to be something in there. And in fact, without that break with the, you know, la-da-dee-da-da-dee-da's in there, that song is the same chord progression for 6 minutes. And then you go, oh, man, let me up on that enough. But yeah.
It's too much like the shit that, what's his name, used to write, Michel Legrand.
Right.
You know, his type of compositions.
Yeah. But with Popper, it's one of those things that it's impressive, but it's just not very good. You know, holy shit, you can do that. That's pretty awesome. But do something interesting with it.
But that's the whole problem. There's no soul in it.
Yeah.
Pure and simple. There's just no soul whatsoever. Now, as far as Good Girls Don't, that song is a fucking masterpiece.
I love it. I love it so much.
You know, it's another one you should try to ramp them up a bit. If they like doing Good Girls Don't, you should turn them on to Baby Talks Dirty.
Yeah.
Because Baby Talks Dirty, first of all, it's a punchy song. I mean, really punchy because it's My Sharona backwards.
Yep.
So people don't know that the Knack made more albums than just Get the Knack.
Right.
They had But the Little Girls Don't Understand, which was so-so. But then they had Round Trip, which was their last album with the original band. And it was a really good album. I saw them, and there was nobody in the club. And that was just really depressing.
Yeah. And again, Doug Figer is one of those guys that, boy, wouldn't rock and roll be great if Doug Figer was still doing it.
Unfortunately, he and Bruce Gary, the drummer, are no longer with us.
Right.
I swear the four of them looked like they were at my bar mitzvah. I swear to you. You look at those guys. Look at them. They're all so Jewy.
Yep.
You know, that's like a whole. Yeah, it's like they're the West Coast version of the Blues Project. Yeah. How can I forget to mention the Paul Butterfield Blues Band? You know, great one of the greatest blues rock harmonica players.
See, that seems to be where it works the best. I mean, the blues is the basis of all pop music ever. I mean, there's just no doubt about it. But the bluesier it gets, the better the harmonica feels. Because, like you said, with Brian Jones, he played like an old black man. He played like he was 70 years old and grew up in southern Mississippi.
Exactly. So, and listen, I play harmonica.
Yeah.
And I can play shit like Love Me Do. And I can play shit like, you know, Little Child and all that stuff, you know. And I've for many years, I always played harmonica on I Should Have Known Better.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I played because the Beatles used the harmonica and so did the Yardbirds and so did the Stones. So I learned how to play, you know.
Yep.
Which was the first place of one-upsmanship in the one-upsmanship games that the Punchline always indulged in.
And one brief nod as well to Tangled Up in Blue. because, again, you know, not the world's biggest Dylan fan, but when he hit it right, he hit it right.
Right. Yeah, I mean, he had his own. And you know what? I like his harmonica playing because it's kind of off and squirrely.
Yep.
Most likely you'll go your way and I'll go mine, because it's got the brass band playing at the same time. So it's just so weird to have the brass band and the harmonica.
Right.
Of course, it's my favorite song on Blonde on Blonde, so...
Indeed. Well, another great conversation. And of course, with all of our stuff, you are welcome to add in some in the comments section at the bottom of the page. Do that thing. And I hope you enjoyed our fifth anniversary edition of the broadcast, or the podcast, as it were. And Rob, looking forward to another great 5 years, man.
Same here, brother, as long as we both survive.
Yeah, right.
Because let's face it, you know, the way things are going in the world, if somebody doesn't get us, you know, the bomb will.
Yeah.
You know what? It's going to be all right. We'll be here for another 5 years. Slinging them right at you just like breakfast.
See you next time.
Yes, indeed. Have a great week, brother.